the chant and then the talk.
You got it.
Thank you. I'm going to speak today about a subject that hasn't really been mentioned much, and that's the 2020 election. And what I'm going to share is my opinion about it and my personal experience. So this is opinion. And so as an introduction, I'm just going to go over a brief summary about what's happened over the last 2 weeks. So we all know on November 3rd, a new president was elected, and that was Joe Biden. And he got, I think it was 76 million votes, which was the largest number of votes ever in the history of the presidency. And his opponent, Donald Trump, received 71 million votes, which was the second highest number of votes in history. And Trump also got 3,300,000 votes more than he did in the last election, 2016 election. And that night, probably into the next morning, there were, I would guess, 76 million Americans who breathed a sigh of relief. Now, it seems as though, and I think this is correct, that President Biden has gotten right on the case and will come up with a plan to get the COVID virus under control. And as he does that, we will move into a new period where we start to strengthen a economic recovery. Now, as we all know, which has already happened, Trump will complicate and make the transition as difficult and painful as possible. And in the course of that, will endanger countless lives of more Americans. Now, on the other hand, there are positive effects. And one of those positive effects is that within 2 months, we will no longer have a mentally ill, incompetent president who's committed so many despicable acts out of the White House. And I think that this, when this transition actually takes place, it will have a pretty profound effect on millions of Americans, as well as people all over the world. Now, it's important to note that while there were this 76 million Americans who were on the quote-unquote winning side of the election, there were 71 million Americans who were on the losing side. Now, 71 million Americans is a lot of people that support the practices and values that the current president does. So that's a lot of people, and in recognition of the fact that there's so many people that see things so differently, Biden has already professed to want a presidency that includes everyone. So having said all this, I recently asked a friend of mine, "So, Joe, where do we go from here?" And he said to me, "I don't know." And I thought to myself, well, that's a good place to start. I don't know. So what have been the responses to this victory? Emotionally, at least, there are probably 76 million Americans who feel relief, joy, and hope. And as I said, these feelings were shared worldwide, as evidenced by all the singing and dancing in the streets around the world, to fireworks, music, etc. On the other hand, as I said, there were 71 million Americans who feel like they were robbed, that the fix was in, and they and their presidents were victims. And this, of course, leads to rage, to fear, to hatred, to paranoia, and in some quarters, the desire to take action. These are people who feel that they have lost their voice. Now, on the other side, the winning side, and I'm deliberately creating this separation of winning and losing. On the winning side, there has been reveling in Trump's pain, in his pain, humiliation, public loss. News shows, talk shows, late night TV have laughed and enjoyed his falling on his face in front of hundreds of millions of people around the world. Magazines, newspapers, and on websites, there are cartoons and stories portraying him as a fool and a simpleton. And for those of us who lived under his regime for 4 years and witnessed his crimes and the harm he has done, humor has to a large extent gotten us through. So since the election and all the things that have started to occur after that, I started to think about and sit with all of the ingredients involved in what's going on. And one thing that occurred to me is the danger in holding on to enjoying someone else's pain, no matter how despicable they may be. Because if we get stuck, we would be contributing to greater division in our country. Right? If we get stuck in this place, we will perpetuate the two sides. And so likewise, when one segment of our country believes it is right, more intelligent, and better people than those losers, this continues the division, fear, hatred, anger, and powerlessness that Trump fed off of. So now I'm going to speak personally. So I asked myself, what do I do now? And before I do anything, I think I should start with understanding that not knowing and bearing witness allows me to see more clearly the ingredients in a situation and to see those ingredients without prejudice or taking a side. So as we know, and I've talked about this many times, not knowing is letting go of fixed ideas, and bearing witness is immersing ourselves in the situation that we are involved in, being fully present and being at one, not two, at one. So from here, I would start by looking deeply into myself and into my self-righteousness, my anger, my fear, and my loss of a sense of oneness. And I would begin to remember the fundamental experience of our practice is that we are all interconnected. We are all one body. And all of the teachings of Zen flow from this experience of being one body. So if all is one, no one gets left out. No one gets left out, no matter how despicable their behavior has been. And if I know this in my body and mind, then I will act with wisdom and compassion in any situation that I enter. Now, I say this, but beginning to practice this is not easy because I cling to my disgust, my anger, all the harm that this guy has done. But I trust these guidelines of not knowing and compassion. And as I said, the ability to do this means being present, unclouded by anger, fear, and hatred. And if I can do this, if I get to that place, my responses will be with wisdom, that is from a sense of oneness. And then I will not perpetuate conditions that have created the situation. I will no longer be a contributor. And so then I would be able to act with compassion. Now, the idea of compassion, some people will say, compassion for that guy? And I think that compassion can be misunderstood. Compassion can seem to some people like, well, isn't that sweet? But it's a surrender. You know, what are you going to do? Accept this guy? So as I say, compassion can be misunderstood. It does not mean that we do not say no, that we don't do all we can to bring about justice and hold someone accountable. It means acting with wisdom so that we don't make a bad situation worse. Now, sort of a simple example would be somebody, I share something personal with somebody and then they tell somebody else. And that results in people laughing about me. And so the way I act about this is I go and punch the guy in the face. Well, that's not acting with wisdom. That's not acting from a place of oneness. So as a member of the Zen Peacemakers, which has a diverse network of socially engaged Buddhists, and a former student of Bernie Glassman, these three tenets, not knowing, bearing witness, and also compassionate action, are what guide my life. But there are other social activists who have similar guidelines, and the common ground is compassion arising out of wisdom. And these teachers show the power, demonstrate the power of love and compassion and compassionate action. So it's not really weakness. It's just another way to take up the situation. So the first one, of course, we know of is Thich Nhat Hanh, who speaks of the interbeing of people, nations, and the whole ecological fabric of the natural world. Our most important task, he says, is to develop correct insight. If we see deeply into the nature of interbeing, we will stop blaming, arguing, and killing, and join together with everyone. And to practice nonviolence, we must first of all learn ways to deal peacefully with ourselves. We start with ourselves, not just making peace, but being peace. So it's not just an idea, it's not a concept, but it's something that we embody in ourselves. And this being peace is, he would say, the key to engage Buddhism. Buddhism that doesn't sit on the sidelines, but goes into the world and engages the world's problems. But hopefully from a place of insight, from a place of oneness, from a place of open-heartedness, not from anger or hatred or the desire to get rid of somebody in the most deeply emotional way. Now, another social activist, I've mentioned this over time, these different people, but I think it's important that they all share in common this entering in from a place of wisdom and compassion. So the next one that I just want to talk briefly about is Martin Luther King, who was a social activist, as we know, and he had a message of love and unity, warmth and compassion. And based on this view, he entered the world as an activist. Again, his compassion was not complacent. He entered as an activist. And then his compassion became a nonviolent approach to confronting injustice. And if you recall, he sought to end racism, white supremacy, economic injustice, for an end to the Vietnam War, and supported Nelson Mandela's fight to end apartheid in South America. And he gave his life to bring about these changes. And I don't know if you recall this, but Thich Nhat Hanh and Martin Luther King actually met during those days and spent some time together. The next person, and the last person for now that I'd like to mention, I don't know how many of you are familiar with Angel Kyodo Williams. So this is a description of her. She's called the most vocal and intriguing African-American Buddhist in America. She's described as a maverick spiritual teacher, master trainer, and founder of the Center for Transformative Change. She's a social visionary who sees transformative social change, applying inner awareness practice to broad-based social change as America's next great movement. Let me just say that again. Applying inner awareness practice to broad-based social change as America's next great movement. And she says, the key to transforming society is transforming our inner lives. Love and justice are not two. Without inner change, there can be no outer change. Now, these principles that I'm talking about, which, as I said, they're not just academic principles. They're lived out in the heart of each one of us and practiced from the heart of each one of us. These principles, these expressions can be lived out both on the macro level, meaning the community, the nation, or internationally, or we can do it in our daily lives with friends, neighbors, people we work with, people that we meet in the bank or the store. So there's not any preference. You know, each one of us live these out, if we make this commitment, live these out in our own particular way. We must remember that meaningful change does not happen overnight. Right? It's important. Change does not happen overnight, and there's a lot we have to work for to change. So if we don't understand this, if we don't understand that change doesn't happen overnight, it will probably lead to frustration, to anger, and then giving up. Now, Bernie said about working for change, quote, even if we can move the needle a hair's breadth, it's worth the effort. And there's another saying, which I have no idea how it got into my head, but it is, all you can do your part, And to try and go beyond that is frustration leading to exhaustion. So thank you for listening.